Hello and welcome to the Thursday, January 28th edition of Juno Afternoon on your very own KTOO. We've got a great show. We'll be talking with our UAS corner. We'll be learning about Bridge. The executive director of the Alaska State Council of Arts is here because it's the Governor Awards for the Arts tonight. We've got a U.S. nuclear policy expert and Nancy Cherney with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lawmakers in South Dakota are considering a bill that removes some power from the State Board of Geographic Names. The board was formed in order to change racist or offensive names on South Dakota landmarks. In 2014, the board was instructed to remove all references to the word squaw. But when the board began looking at a possible name change for Harney Peak, the tallest point in the state, some lawmakers say it went too far. Charles Michael Ray has more.
Originally, some proposed dissolving the Board of Geographic Names altogether, but changes to the bill and committee now keep the board, but limit its role. GOP State Representative Jim Bolin is a sponsor of the legislation. He believes the board was overreaching its authority when it began considering a possible name change for Harney Peak in the Black Hills.
I think the difference here is between sometimes word, the actual name is offensive in our culture, in comparison to the actions of an individual. And when you start going down that road, very difficult to figure out where you're going to stop.
But others expressed concern. State Representative Kevin Killer is from Oglala Lakota County, which was recently renamed from Shannon County. Many say the former county namesake, Peter Shannon, didn't treat Native people fairly. Some argue for a name change of Harney Peak for the same reason. Some Lakota people accused General William Harney of massacres during the battles over Dakota Territory in the 1850s. Representative Kevin Killer says the State Board of Geographic Names has acted only with ample public input, and he says it plays an important role in reconciliation.
As South Carolina finally rid itself of the Confederate flag as a symbol of slavery and racism in the South, so should South Dakota continue to rid itself of geographic names that stand for racism, inequality, disrespect, inhumanity, and cultural genocide of the Lakota, Dakota people and African American communities.
House Bill 1060, which changes the role of the Board of Geographic Names, went on to pass the committee by a vote of 11-2. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The bill also passed the South Dakota House and is on its way to the Senate. Leaders from nearly two dozen Arizona tribes recently gathered at the state capitol for the 21st annual Indian Nations and Tribes Legislative Day. Navajo Nation President Russell Begay told State House representatives that he feels tribal sovereignty is threatened and urged them to act on several proposals. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Begay told lawmakers he wants to dispel stereotypes that the Navajo Nation is third world.
Make no mistake about the fact that we are a nation, and we are a proud nation. We are not a program of the federal government.
Begay criticized a lawsuit that aims to dismantle parts of the Indian Child Welfare Act. The Goldwater Institute is suing the federal government to remove a requirement that gives Native American foster children preferential placement with Native American families.
Keep our children with our people. Let us take care of our own children. And ICWA, let me tell you, is under attack. And the attack of ICWA is an attack on the sovereignty of the Navajo Nation, but also all the other tribes.
State lawmakers haven't announced a plan for addressing the tribes' concerns. But Navajo Nation officials will meet with legislators throughout the 2016 session to continue discussions. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
U.S. Senators John Tester and Maria Cantwell have introduced tribal school construction legislation. The Safety Act includes building and upgrading facilities at Bureau of Indian Education schools. It would also be applied to tribal colleges and state-run schools with large American Indian and Alaska Native populations. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace runs through January 31st. Many Indian health clinics will host enrollment events with help available in person. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and zero deductibles. Plus, your clinic keeps more resources when they can bill your insurer. You can set an example for your family, friends, and community by ensuring your needs are covered when you visit healthcare.gov/tribal.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use PIC, click Give, and select KNBA FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It is Thursday. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and the weather is rain. Tonight, rain showers. Tomorrow, numerous rain showers. Friday night, lows around 32, that magic number. Saturday, mostly cloudy, highs around 36. But the news is Eagle Crest is reopening on Saturday. So they close, but they will be open on Saturday, and everything is running. Porcupine, Hooter, and Ptarmigan chairlifts will operate from 8 to 3:30 with Black Bear opening at 9:30. And they're hoping for some cold snows. They say the cold temps for some snow. They say that the base up top has held pretty well. So that is good news for rain-ridden Juno. So here we go. Let's kick off the show. We've got Pat Race. He's here with his UAS Sound and Motion hat on, actually. He's going to be the presenter tomorrow night. Pat is the owner of Alaska Robotics, and he's here to talk about the Jump Film Fest.
Yeah, the Jump Society Film Festival has we have a long running partnership with the University of Alaska Southeast. We often participate in their Sound and Motion series, and we're excited to be doing a screening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And it's our film festival of locally made short films. And so it's a great community presentation of work that local folks are doing.
That sounds great. So that's 7 p.m. at the Egan Library out at UAS tomorrow night.
Yep. And or is that at the lecture hall?
At the lecture hall.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Jump Society, is that an acronym?
Yeah, it's the Juno Underground Motion Picture Society.
Okay. Yeah. We have our very own Motion Picture Society
we like,
in Juno.
We like acronyms here in Juno, so I went overboard on that one.
Okay. So we were chatting while the news was on, and 14 years? The Jump Film Society has been around for 14 years?
Yeah, we've been doing it for 14 years. We do two shows or two screenings a year, two sets of screenings, and so we screened probably over about 500 locally made short films by now. And this batch of films, we've got, I think, about 22. And they range from, documentary to comedy, animation, some really great animation in this one. It's always a fun show. It's always interesting to see what people are up to. And I think the quality's really increased over the last several years.
That sounds great. And when you say short, how short is short?
Some of them can be as short as like 30 seconds, and some of them are, our only rule that we have is that they be 10 minutes or less. So some of them are right up to that bumper mark, and some of them are just a blink of an eye.
Okay. And so 22 are in this festival.
Yeah, it's like a collection, I guess.
Right, in this collection, in the 2016 mm-hmm. January collection.
Mm-hmm.
But how many do you receive?
That's actually, I think, all the ones we've received this time. In years past, there have been times when we've received too many to screen, and so we've had to pare it down a little bit. But for the most part, we try to screen everything that we get, and we don't really do a lot of, like, monitoring for content or anything like that. But it's really been a good self-selecting group over the years.
That sounds great. So these aired at the Goldtown Nickelodeon just recently, mm-hmm. and this will be the final showing of this collection tomorrow night.
Right, yeah. We did five screenings at Goldtown, and we had some pretty good attendance over there. And then this will be our Valley show out at UAS. Yeah,
sounds great.
It's nice to get out to that part of town.
Okay, so you're the president of this nonprofit organization.
Yep.
Okay, and how many films have you made?
Oh, I could not answer that off the top of my head. I've made a lot of films. I probably made more than 100 short films, probably well more than that. I contribute several to each festival and have just been making films since I was a little kid growing up here in Juneau, and kind of got started with doing claymation. It was like back when the California raisins were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would make these little clay models, and then I would animate them.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And now, you know, many years later, what is it about film that keeps on drawing you back?
I've been getting more and more into documentary. I like telling people stories. It's, you know, it's become a profession for me. It's something I do professionally. I get paid to travel around and make films. And so this is a way to share some of that work, too. This festival has one or two films that we filmed outside of Juno. The Juno connection is that we are Juno filmmakers, but there's some really neat glimpses of other parts of the state in here. And there's another artist, Sarah Betcher, who spent a lot of time up in Kotzebue and submitted some of her work from up there. So it's really neat to see some other parts of the state in this festival.
Sounds great. Yeah. So you said the documentary format is what's interesting you right now at this moment.
Yeah.
And so give us one glimpse of one of the pieces that you've created that's going to be in the film fest tomorrow night.
I think one of the pieces I created that I'm really proud of is about Chignik Lagoon and one of the energy projects that they did there. So they Chignik Lagoon is right on the kind of on the cusp of the Aleutians. And it's a very small town, and they were running off of diesel generators for their electricity. And so they recently installed a hydro-powered generator, and it's kind of interesting to see how that has changed the community and what people think of it. And it's just a small little fishing town that is way out there, and it was fun to get out and see it and share it with people.
Yeah, what a great opportunity.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
So that's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, part of the UAS Sound in Motion out at the university, and don't miss it. Well,
yeah,
thanks so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for your time, too.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 28th of January, 2016. It was on this date in 1813 Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice was published. It's the birthday of the novelist who said, "Sit down and put down everything that comes into your head, and then you're a writer. But an author is one who can judge his own stuff's worth without pity, and destroy most of it." The novelist Colette, born in France in 1873, a beautiful young woman. She was athletic, wore her hair in a long red braid, and became famous for four novels that she published in 4 years, 1900 to 1903, all about a woman named Claudine, who became a cultural sensation in France. Colette, author of 50 novels, including Gigi, made into a Broadway play and a movie. Colette, who died in 1954 and became the first woman in the history of France to be given a state funeral, though she was denied a Catholic burial. Colette, who said, "To be astonished is one of the surest ways of not growing old too quickly." And it's the birthday of the artist Jackson Pollock, born in Cody, Wyoming, 1912, came to New York, studied with the painter Thomas Hart Benton, and became interested in abstract art after he went to an exhibit of Picasso's work at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. In the late 1940s, Pollock began experimenting with a technique in which he let the paint simply drip onto canvases laid on the floor of his studio. He said, "On the floor, I am more at ease. I feel nearer, more part of the painting, since this way I can walk around it, work from the four sides, and literally be in the painting." He used household paint rather than artists' paints because it was more liquid and it dripped more easily off of whatever he used, a brush or a stick or a turkey baster. Jackson Pollock, whose career was cut short by alcoholism, August 1956, he crashed his car into a tree while driving drunk and died. Here's a poem for today by Elizabeth Poliner. entitled Blue. Clear, windy day, and the ocean's waters rush ahead singing. In the distance off the low islands, the white splash of waves, the clouds, huge white puffs, stationary in the bluest air, seem unreal, as if imported and tacked up by some grand producer. Oh, the blue we live in, bright sky blue, glossy, silvery ocean blue, the blue we're permitted, our essential bed, our daily blanket. It's our home, this life in, through, and around, blue, by plan or chance, by any account, a wonder, a miracle, a day like today, the water, busy, noisy, and constant, as if no amount of praise were enough for our blue, brilliant world. Blue, a poem by Elizabeth Poliner from What You Know in Your Hands, published by David Robert Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 17 minutes past the hour in gray, not blue, Juno. A challenge to all the poets. I'd like to hear a poem about Juno using as many grays as there were blue in Garrison's last piece. Anyway, Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your talking head for Thursdays. And our next guests are Rory Darling. He is the president of the Juno Bridge Club, and Jan Moyer, both of which are here to talk about the Bridge Club as in the card game bridge, correct?
That's correct, Joan. Thank you.
So what's the story with the game of bridge? I've always heard about bridge. I don't know how to play. And it takes partners, right?
Well, it does. Very quickly, bridge is a card game that is complicated with simple rules. So, in other words, it's easy to get into it, but it's very difficult to master it.
Okay.
And so it's played around the world. It's very popular. We are affiliated with the American Contract Bridge League, which has, I think, roughly 400,000 members in the United States. And then the other big organization worldwide is the World Bridge Federation. But the point is that you can go anywhere in the world and play a game of bridge.
Okay.
And we have.
That sounds great.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, before we even go any further, what was the most exotic location where you played bridge?
New Zealand.
I would say New Zealand. One of the nice things is, of course, you stop in for an evening, and you get to chat with the local people. It's a very social game. That's another thing that we'd like to emphasize, and we try to emphasize with our classes, is that the bridge is not only a challenging game, but it's also a social game.
That sounds great.
You can play it in tournaments and competitively, but you can also play it around a kitchen table with friends and, you know, a glass of wine or something. And so it doesn't have to be a
cutthroat.
Exactly.
Competitive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about competitive, but maybe cutthroat.
You can also get in a money game, too.
Here we go. The many, many versions of bridge. But let's bring it so we have a little idea of what it is, the international and national presence. Let's talk about Juno. How many members do you have in the Juno Bridge Club, and how many people are showing up for games?
The Juno Bridge Club is actually quite active. I'd say we have roughly 40 members. It's not really a membership thing. It's whoever is interested and shows up. But roughly there are 40 bridge players that play regularly in town.
Wow.
There are also many informal players that play at outside of a formal organization setting, and I would guess there's several dozen of those. I mean, it's quite widely known.
Do you have ongoing bridge games?
Yes, we do. We are a regular club. We are affiliated. We are a sanctioned club of the American Contract Bridge League. We have two regular games a week, Wednesday nights and Sunday afternoons, and it's a 52-week-a-year endeavor.
Where do the games take place?
The Wednesday games are at Fireweed Place on Willoughby Street, and the Sunday games are at the Senior Center by the bridge.
Can you just drop in, or do you need...
Yes, you can, but it's really the kind of thing where you have to... You need to know about it ahead of time. We get visitors from out of town occasionally.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's better if they call and let us know. You do need a partner to play bridge. It doesn't have to be someone that you've played with a lot. It can be a stranger. And you just, but we need to know that you're going to show up, especially without a partner, so we can make sure we can arrange to have a partner for you.
I've got it.
Yeah.
So what if you don't know how to play and you want to learn how to play?
That is a lesson thing. Before we get into that, though, I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about the history of the Juneau Bridge Club for some of the listeners out there who have been around here for a long time. To my knowledge, the Juneau Bridge Club has been active since the early 70s and probably before that. And it was actually a very colorful group of people. It was a larger crowd. They used to play at the Yacht Club, and the location has moved around quite a bit. But it was a very active thing. And in Southeast Alaska, it was a unifying theme throughout Southeast Alaska. We would get together in the fall and play tournaments with people from Ketchikan, Haines, and the Sitka and Petersburg, but mostly Ketchikan and Haines. And nowadays, the tournaments we run, we get people from Whitehorse as well.
Cool.
So it actually is a glue that holds together the community in some way, and it's been going on for a long time.
Great. Great. And so it's Wednesdays and Sundays. And what about if you want to learn how to play?
Okay. We offer classes periodically, and we have one starting next Tuesday, which is February 2nd. And it's from 6 to 8 p.m. And we have a book. So, and there's 9 chapters in the book. Consequently, there are 9 weeks for the classes. And the classes are half, I'm going to say teaching, interactive teaching, and half actually playing the cards. We can handle about 24 people in the class, and we have a cost of $40, and that includes the textbook and all the lessons.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. What if people are listening and they want to find out more? Is there a number or a website?
If they could just call me, Jan Moyer, at 957-6972, that would be great. I want to make sure that I don't end up with 100 people showing up to the class.
I think the other thing that's important to note is that this particular class is geared towards people with no experience at bridge. So it is definitely a beginner. I think it's useful to have an interest in cards, because once you get into it, you really have to enjoy cards to enjoy the game of bridge. But that being said, this is a novice, start from scratch class, and so there's no prior experience necessary.
Sounds great.
And at the end of the class, you will be able to sit down with other bridge players and play.
Or your grandparents.
Exactly. A lot of people learned either in college or their family. So,
yeah,
but
we also emphasize the social nature of the game. As a social game, we actually have some elderly people that play into their late 80s and early 90s. I mean, it keeps you active through a long period of your life, and it's a good way to get together with people of different age groups.
And you can start young. And there's also some I'm going to call it more informal bridge that happens on Monday afternoons and Wednesday afternoons in town.
And where is that?
That's at the Senior Center.
All right, cool. So one more time, we're chatting with people from the Juneau Bridge Club. They get together twice a week, and there's a class starting next Tuesday for people new to the game of bridge, the card game bridge. And what's the number they should call?
If you're interested in taking the class or have questions about it, please call me at 957-6972, and my name is Jan.
Great. Thank you both for coming in again, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Joan.
Okay, for all you PBS fans, pop quiz. What is that the theme song to? What is the show the theme song to? My next guest is Rich Moniak. He's here for the Juno People for Peace and Justice, and he's looking at me. Do you know what that theme song
I only know because Jeff just told us.
Well, you could tell everybody.
No, you left the quiz out there for them.
So, all right. Yeah. Well, if you know the answer, call in. How's that? Anyway, here we are, Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He picks all the music, puts the whole show together, gets the guest lined up. I'm Joan Pardis, your talking head, and for Thursdays only. And Rich Moniak is here, and he is here representing, as I said, Juno People for Peace and Justice. And we're here to talk about Paul Carroll, who's a noted expert on U.S. nuclear policy, and he's coming to town. And from what I understand is Paul Carroll, who will be here next week, directs all of Plowshares Fund's grant-making efforts and provides strategic guidance when it comes to nuclear policy. He's a well-regarded expert on a broad array of nuclear weapon topics, and Plowshares Fund supports the smartest minds and most effective organizations to reduce nuclear stockpiles, prevent new nuclear states, and increase global security. Is that true, Rich?
That's true, yes.
Okay, so what brings him to Juno?
Well, nuclear weapons, you know, come and go from our news awareness periodically, and most recently, in this past month, we've had two stories. One, the Iran nuclear deal was implemented earlier this month, and the other one is North Korea flexing its nuclear muscles. And every time North Korea does that, you know, our congressional delegation gets all up in arms and acts like they're threatening us and talks about missile defense. And it's a lot more complicated than that, and nuclear weapons, it tends to be off the radar too long for us to be able to make any headway, do anything about it.
So Paul's coming to town. I'm like shaking my head here with Paul, with Rich. But so Paul's coming to town, and he's doing a couple of events here?
He's doing two events. He's doing two public events, one at UAS that it's 8:30 at night at the lecture hall, which seems late next Monday. But that's because the student activities group put that together, and they wanted to make sure students can attend that after they finish their evening classes.
Oh, good.
And so, then the other one is sponsored by the Juno World Affairs Council. The first one is on the Iran nuclear deal, and the second one is on North Korea.
Okay. And how does JWAC and Juno for People, Juno World Affairs Council, and Juno People for Peace and Justice get these great experts to come up to Juno?
Well, we've been in touch. Paul's been here before. We've been in touch with him off and on, in particular Judith Meyer. She's contributes a lot to Plowshares and is in contact with them a lot. And they volunteered to come up here after the, with what's going on. We're a relevant state. We were very active several years ago with the nuclear issue when the START Treaty was being negotiated because the our delegation was considered a swing vote for ratifying that treaty. Paul came after that was ratified to continue, you know, the discussion.
Okay. All right. So Paul's going to be at UAS. Paul Carroll, nuclear weapons policy expert, is going to be at UAS on Monday at 8:30. And then when's the other event?
Tuesday, right here at K2.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
At 360.
Downstairs.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And then if you want more information, I know that you could go to the Juno World Affairs Council website, and I don't know if there's information.
The other one is posted on the calendar at UAS.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
Or you can give Judith Meyer a call at 789-9229.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Bird Note. It's 1752. At first, the citizens of Gothenburg, Sweden, are enchanted by the colorful little parakeet that traders have brought back from the exotic East Indies. But the bird soon turns sullen, as I would too, fed on an unvarying diet of cold boiled rice. It declines to whistle, far less to speak, and spends most of its time hanging from its perch, suspended by its gnarled little feet, upside down. There are a dozen species of hanging parrots, also known as bat parrots, in the tropical forests of southern Asia and Indonesia. Clad in bright greens, blues, and reds, they actually do sleep, even sometimes bathe, upside down. No other birds sleep like this. This bizarre behavior probably protects hanging parrots from predators, which are less likely to spot a tasty morsel dangling beneath the leaves. The parrots have even evolved a way to overcome the inevitable hygienic challenge posed by sleeping upside down. When nature calls, they shift their weight to a single foot, flip the tail back, and aim carefully. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Join KTOO Public Media for the annual KTOO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on Saturday, February 6th. Due to the rapid growth of this annual event, we've expanded the number of restaurants preparing dishes, moved the event to Centennial Hall to comfortably accommodate everyone, and added a silent auction. This year's Seafood Festival will also feature live music from the Rob Cohen Jazz Trio and the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band. Tickets are on sale now at KTOO.org.
Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It is 28 minutes to the hour. It is January 28th, and the temperature right now is 38 downtown at the airport and 36 at the Mendenhall Valley. Our next guest is Shannon Doubt. She is the executive director for the Alaska Council of the Arts. And why is she in Juno? She's in Juno because it's the Governor's Awards tonight.
Woohoo!
Tonight. So we're here to talk about the Governor's Awards, talk about the council, and talk about, of course, the recipients of all the awards tonight. So, Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Pat Race is back in the studio because he happens to be a board member of the Alaska State Council.
The radio station.
Yeah. He was lingering. He was loitering with our arts and culture staff. So, Shannon, when did you get into Juno?
We got in Tuesday night and had our CHAMP advocacy day yesterday and have just been preparing for the award session all day today.
Sounds great. So tell our listeners what the CHAMP advocacy training is.
It is Culture, Humanities, Arts, Museums Partners. So it's a partnership of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, the Alaska Humanities Forum, Museums Alaska, and the Alaska Historical Society. And we all come together and meet with our elected officials to tell them about the importance of arts, culture, and humanities.
And we had some representatives from public broadcasting this year, which
we
was really
too.
Exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. So how many people were involved with the advocacy program?
I would say there were about 20, 30.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Storming the Capitol. Yay!
Storming the Capitol. Yeah, we have it.
Or maybe dancing and prancing and singing and all.
Yeah, that's right. Quoting poetry and so on and so forth.
So the Governor's Awards, can you tell me a little bit about what the Governor Awards are and what the process is to name the recipients each year?
Sure. So it's a joint partnership with our agency and the Alaska Humanities Forum, and it's to celebrate the Alaskans who make our lives so much better through the arts and humanities. We do an open call for nominations. The arts categories, we have different categories that rotate year to year. Humanities has a general category, and then this year they have the Alaska Studies Educator of the Year Award that they're giving out. We do an open call, and then members of our respective boards have a committee that reviews the nominations and selects the awardees, and then that's forwarded to the governor for his blessing.
Excellent, excellent. And so tonight is the big event.
Big event.
And where is it?
It is across the street at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
What
Juno
time?
Arts and Culture Center.
Mm-hmm.
The public reception begins at 6:30, and the ceremony begins at 7:30. It'll also be broadcast live throughout the state on public television.
Excellent. And so let's talk about the recipients this year. We have the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Individual Artist Award, Arts and Advocacy Award, and the Margaret Nick Cook Award. Is that correct?
Correct.
So the Lifetime Achievement Award goes to June Rogers in Fairbanks.
Yes.
And what is her medium?
Her medium is all things art all the time. She's just a powerhouse, has been doing amazing work in Fairbanks her whole life to really improve the arts sector there. And I think one of the things that is really special about June is that she sits at a lot of tables that arts people don't normally sit at. They do increasingly these days, but the Convention and Visitors Bureau table, the Chamber of Commerce table, in making sure that the arts are part of the strategies for all all of those different things that improve our economy as well as our quality of life.
No, excellent. Yay, June. Thank you for your service.
Yes, yes.
And then the Individual Artist Award is Pat Garley.
Palmer.
Palmer,
yes.
And what is his or her media?
He's a metalworker sculptor. He also has an artist studio and is increasingly a thriving creative business helping other artists fabricate their work.
Cool.
Yeah, so you get art and business, which is terrific.
So far, two for two on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the Art Advocacy Award goes to our very own Nancy DeCharney, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. So yay, Nancy.
We love Nancy.
Yeah, so you could talk about Nancy. I talk to Nancy every week, but I'd love to hear what the official statement from the Alaska State Council is for her.
Sure. I mean, Nancy is, we partner with them on the Governor's Awards every year. We made sure to keep her out of it so she could actually attend as awardee this year and not have to be working it. We also have a significant partnership with them to do the Poetry Out Loud program, which is a statewide poetry recitation program for high school students. And we have the state finals here in March every year at the Jack. And actually at KTOO, we've been rotating it, and they're our key partner in making sure that that happens here in Juneau. So we have a great relationship with Nancy. She's one of the leaders in the state. We at the Alaska State Council on the Arts really rely on strong local arts councils to be our partners in serving all of the state, and I think both June and Nancy are two of the strongest that we have in the state. So
that's
wonderful.
That's great. Hey, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Shannon Dowd. She is the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of the Arts, and she is here for the Governor's Awards, and we're talking about Nancy DeCharney, our local lady who just got the Arts Advocacy Award for the whole state, which is great. And then let's talk about the Margaret Nick Cook Award, what it is and who the recipient is.
So this is a special endowed award. It happens every other year in honor of Margaret Nick Cook, and it's to award Alaskans who specifically work in Alaskan Native arts and languages. And Vicki is a Junoite here, Vicki Soboloff, and recently for much of her life ran the Children of All Nations dance group, which performed at the first Governor's Awards that we did here in Juneau 3 years ago after we moved it to Juneau.
Yay.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Congratulations, Vicki.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Two hometown gals scoring big on the state. That's
absolutely
great. Okay, and then we have the Governor Awards for the Humanities statewide, so that's this Distinguished Service to the Humanities is Cyrano's in Anchorage, a theater company of Steve Henriksen, another Juno person, a Juno boy, joining our Juno gals. And then the woman from Barrow, Lucy Richard, excellent. And then the Alaska Studies Educator of the Year, it goes to Mark Swanson in Stewart.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Okay,
great slate.
So this is the Governor's Awards, but can you tell us a little bit about what the Alaska State Council of the Arts does?
Sure. So we exist to improve all Alaskans' lives through the arts, and we believe that all people, whether they're professional artists or just your average citizen, has a life benefit from being creators and having creative expressive lives, and we try to support that in everything we do. So we do that through giving grants to artists and arts organizations. A lot of these awardees are grantees of ours as well. We also work to support artists as they try to develop their careers and businesses, because we believe that the arts and the creative economy in Alaska can play a good role in helping us in our state challenges around our budget and economy.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So, and Pat Race is here, and he's someone who just embodies everything that
he
does. Talked about.
He's a business owner, creative business.
Exactly. Yeah, I straddle that the two worlds there of like the art and creative expression, and then the entrepreneurial, a small business owner. And it's and I think a lot of people do that. I don't think that I think there's this common misperception that participation in the arts is a little bit light and fluffy, and really a lot of these people are small business owners and really hard workers and contributing to their economies in very interesting ways.
Excellent. So you, at the organization, the Alaska State Council of the Arts Awards grants, is there a grant cycle coming up
that
our listeners would be interested to know about?
Sure. We always have quarterly grants that are available throughout the year. We're actually out of grant money for our quarterlies till the end of our fiscal year, which is June 30th. But we offer career opportunity grants for artists and arts administrators. We have a community arts development grant. Coming up soon, opening soon, will be our operating support grants, which is to to some of our established arts organizations. We also have an artists in schools grant program that sometimes it funds nonprofits such as the Juno Arts and Humanities Council or school districts directly to get arts education into schools.
And if people want to find out the full scope of all these different opportunities, they could check out the website.
Yeah, yep. They could just Google.
Okay. So how long have you been at the helm of the agency?
I just passed my four-year anniversary at the agency.
So this is your fourth Governor Award.
It is. It
okay.
is. Yeah.
Tell us some of the highlights that you like about the evening.
Well, we moved it to Juno 3 years ago, and it's I think enlivened it quite a bit. And every year has been its own kind of wonderful, magical experience, because we highlight what we changed when we brought it to Juno was rather than have it be a dinner, a plated dinner, it became a performance event. So we're able to spotlight Alaskan artists every year. And that, I think, has been really, really exciting because we have such riches of artists. So we have Lily Hope doing a Raven story tonight, Pulse Dance Company out of Anchorage doing a special piece that they commissioned just for this. And Mava Ordaz, who is our 2015 National Poetry Out Loud champion. So she beat out the whole country to win, and she's come back. She's in school in New York right now, and she came back to perform for us tonight. And then Sophia Street, a musician from Anchorage, is here to perform as well. So it makes it really fun, and it's a fun party, too.
That sounds great. Yeah. And are there a few tickets still left?
There are a few tickets still left.
Okay,
yeah.
So you should
get them at the Jack's website.
Exactly. Scoop them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great performance. It's definitely worth being there to not just to mix and mingle and meet people, but to see these performers from all over the state. They're just incredible. It's a rare opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And this year, the governor actually had to go back to Anchorage to participate in a different award ceremony. So we're very delighted to have the lieutenant governor with us tonight.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
That'll be great. Well, thank you both for
coming
by. Thank you both for everything you do for the state and for Juno. And I'm pointing to Pat with his hat on for the state and Juno and so on and so forth. And check out the party. It starts out at 6:30 at the Jack tonight.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
Grandma Moses. Showed them at the modern art. That's how Grandma got her start. Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
It is 14 minutes to the hour. It is Thursday, January 28th. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're here with Nancy DeCharney to talk about Arts Up. We're very happy to have her. She's got a big night tonight. The Governor's Award is happening, as you all know. Okay. You were just listening. And Nancy is the recipient of the Arts Efficacy Award. Congratulations, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
You well-deserved award.
Well, thank you. I'm startled and excited and everything else. So.
Yeah. But meanwhile, she's here to tell us what's going on in Juno.
I'm here to advocate. I want to testify.
Exactly. Speaking of testify, I saw the Perseverance Theater play.
Amazing.
Thought it was terrific.
Yes. I am strongly encourage people to go see that. I know the topic seems sensitive and perhaps, but you...
It's well done. It's really well done. So we're talking about Our Voices Will Be Heard at Perseverance Theater, which is a play by an Alaskan playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a local girl from Hoonah originally, I believe.
I can't remember. But anyway, it's running through February 7th. And as we always say, you run out of weekends if you don't watch out. So this one is definitely a don't miss. Yes, we always say that. You say, get your ticket, and then nobody does, and then they're like, oh. But this one's really worth, this is really one of their best. So go see that.
I could not agree more.
We have, as you mentioned, the Governor's Awards tonight. There's Tango Dancing at Suite 907. And then let's see, Friday night. The Platypus Con, the gamer convention, starts at the Jack in the evening, and it runs 24 hours a day until Sunday. You can play all the board games and all sorts of games that you want to play down at the Jack.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very fun. There is a Sailor Talk, Seas Sailor Talk number 1 at 6 p.m. at Northwind Architects on Friday. Traveler Duo is at Rockwell for at 6 p.m. And at 7 p.m. it is Seven Brides for Seven Brothers at the JDHS Auditorium. That's running through the weekend, too, and that's the high school.
That's a high school production. They're musical, and I think it runs 2 weekends, doesn't it?
Could be. And I saw the pictures of the guy doing the little splits in the air thing. It's amazing.
Oh, cool.
Great dancing and all that sort of stuff. So you got a lot to do. Let's get going. Let's see. Saturday.
Take your disco nap. Eat your media.
Let's go. Take your vitamins. We need them. Sweatin' to the Improv with Sarah Shoemaker. This is at the Hangar on the Wharf Ballroom. This woman's going to teach you how to become an improv person, but also do exercises at the same time, as I understand it. So you can put together a routine for yourself that helps you with your improv work, but also helps you work out. And that's from 2 to 3 at the Hangar.
Is that above, like, walking and chewing gum?
It might very well. Could be a challenge for some of us. There is the Seven Brides does a matinee on Saturday at 4 p.m. It's the Queer Film Festival, Clouds of Sils Maria at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. This is a benefit for the Juno Pride. Okay, so it says there's Bacon Fest, and in fact there is Bacon Fest, but there are no Bacon Fest tickets. So you'll just have to make your own bacon. So you're just going to have to stand outside and sniff.
Ooh, there you go.
That'll be bad. There's also this weekend the Juno Symphony Winter Concert.
That's right.
And note to everyone, it is unreserved seating and it is at Thunder Mountain High School. It's a different venue for them. And
it's Brahms. Program
and it's Brahms. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And always there's the pre-concert talk. So if you come at 7, you might have a better chance of getting...
With Troy Quinn, the new conductor.
Yeah.
Not so new, but new conductor.
He's doing a great job. I think his selections have been wonderful, and I'm looking forward to it. So that's Saturday night at 8 p.m. and Sunday afternoon at 3. As I said, the platypus thing goes all day on Sunday. We have, international folk dancing and the ukulele jam that happen every Sunday. On Monday, it's the Skiers Friday, which I figured out what that's all about.
At the Hangar Ballroom.
At 8:30 p.m., Nuclear Security Today, 2 Steps Forward, 1 Step Back. That's out at UAS.
on Monday. On Tuesday, we have West Coast Swing Dancing out at Suite 907. It's free and it's lots of fun. Good exercise. And, let's do that. I'm going to do that. But speaking of dancing, Heather Hoagland is back in town.
I was hoping you were going to talk about this. Cuban salsa.
Yes, she's going to do workshops. That's also happening out at Suite 907. She has quite a lineup of things. And I know somebody that went to Capitol Steps left a comment for us that says of the things they would like us to bring is salsa workshops and stuff. But they didn't leave their name. So I hope they're listening and know that we have the salsa workshop. We just... like that. It worked out.
Divine intervention. Yeah, there you go. So that's 6 o'clock on Wednesday, right, at 9:07 for the beginner's class.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's more to it than that.
I think then 7:15 is the intermediate class. If you pass the beginner's class, maybe you can.
They'll let you into the next one. And there's also Lego Club happening out at the Mendenhall Public Library at 5:30. So there's quite a few things. Let's see. The Alaska Design Forum has a graphic artist who's from Belgium or China. His organization is based in both locations. And I checked out his website, amazing designs. They bring these very, very interesting people to come to town. That's Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's $15 or $5. And that's on Wednesday at 6 p.m. So take time to look at these design forum things. Sometimes if you get an opportunity, and this one looks really good. Wildlife Wednesday is managing Walrus Island State Game Sanctuary in Bristol Bay. That's at the New Valley Library at 7 p.m. There's an old-time music jam, and there is the Queer Film Festival at the Nickelodeon, 7:30. We have a lot of stuff to do.
We have a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. So I hope that we see you at something and everything.
Everything.
Do we have time?
No, we're good.
We're still good? I thought he was telling me to
wrap
it up.
So let me ask you a little bit about the Governor's Awards tonight.
Okay.
So you're one of the recipients.
Yes.
And you're not working on the show tonight. You're actually going as a guest.
Going as a guest.
Excellent.
I've been practicing walking up on the stage and not stumbling.
Right. That comes with the chewing. And so on and so forth.
Yes.
So what happens at the Governor's Awards? You have performers.
Mm-hmm.
And
Lily Hope will be performing some stories. There's a dance troupe coming from Anchorage, a contemporary dance team. I can't remember who all the performers are. Oh, a woman named Sophie, I think, from up north. She plays the ukulele. Really good, so I've been listening to that. It's just a wonderful opportunity for people to be acknowledged, both for their contributions to the arts community and the humanities. They've sort of combined the two of them. So, for example, Steve Hendrickson from the State Museum is receiving an award, and a woman from up in Barrow who teaches Inupiat language is going to be awarded. So it's just a wonderful... It's nice to have uplifting things, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we want to thank you, all of us in the studio and our listeners. I'm speaking for everyone. We want to thank you for all that you do for Juno and
the
art scene around the state.
All the people help. So that's how it works.
All right. Well,
thank you.
Thanks for coming in on your busy day, on your day.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with the weather and some other things. So stay tuned.
I forgot to talk about
the Innovation Summit on February 8th and 9th, designed by the Juneau Economic Development Council, celebrates innovation and offers a venue for collaboration. This year, we're debuting a new component just for Alaska entrepreneurs. Juneau's first ever entrepreneur pitch in the morning breakfast lets up to 5 entrepreneurs present their business idea to an interested audience with a chance to win a cash prize. If you'd like to participate or sponsor, please visit jedc.org/innovation.
Support comes from GCI Wireless with coverage in 200 communities throughout Alaska. More details on available plans and devices at gci.com.
We have a winner to our quiz, by the way. Someone did call in. It is Downton Abbey, if people are wondering what that theme song is. We've got a whole upstairs, downstairs thing going on right here in the studio with Jeff and myself. Anyway, I just want to reiterate, Eagle Crest will be reopening this Saturday. You have to go up to the mountain, check it out. They say that their base has been hanging on pretty well, considering all the rain. Speaking of rain, tonight rain showers, mostly cloudy. Tomorrow scattered rain, dropping to 31 Friday night. On Saturday, mostly cloudy, highs around 38. My iPhone says it's going to be sunny in Juneau, but I never believe it. Anyway, tonight at 7 o'clock, listen to the broadcast of the Mudrooms presentation from January 13th, featuring Jennifer Mannix, Miguel Rohrbacher, Heather Ridgway, Alasanga, Carolyn Garcia, Steve Suing, and Jonathan Smith. And then also, put it in your head, Monday evening, live coverage of the Iowa caucuses from 5 to 7 right here. And tomorrow, Andy Klein will be sitting where I'm sitting, and he is going to be talking about the Friday Fireside Lectures with none other than fantastic local photographer Laurent Dink. And he will be talking about polar bears. He travels the world, has amazing photographs. We'll be learning about Where's Girls on the Run, and then also Seafood Fest, of course. And then Troy Quinn, the conductor of the Juneau Symphony, will be back in to talk about this week's program, the concerts, and we'll meet two improv actors and find out about their weekend shows. All that and more. Stay tuned, and you can always listen online at ktoo.org. Have a great day.